welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, June 12th, and you're tuned into KTOO. My name is Shona Strouser. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll learn about the Forest Service District Energy Summit Thursday evening presentation. We'll get the details about Pride Week that's coming up next week. MK McNaughton will be here to highlight her upcoming show, Grit. And Catherine Hatch will be here with Arts Up. We have some great things happening around in our community. Celebration here happening in day two of celebration. And also in the world with the start of the World Cup today. Writer's Almanac and more here on Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez in Anchorage. Public hearings this week in Alaska examined issues facing Native children. The U.S. Attorney General's task force met as tribal leaders gathered for the National Congress of American Indians Mid-Year Conference. Former U.S. Senator Byron Dorgan is a Native youth advocate. Dorgan's organization, the Center for Native American Youth, is evaluating and tackling some challenges facing young people today.
We have seen clusters of teen suicides that just are heartbreaking. Issues of substance abuse, education opportunity, gangs, there's just a wide range of issues. You know, but let me just say, even as I talk about these issues that are the negative influences and the challenges on many of the reservations, we also find kids that we have brought into the Champions for Change program who are doing inspiring, wonderful things on Indian reservations, and they become mentors for other kids as well.
Dorgan points to the youth movement at the National Congress of American Indians. Cassandra Church from the Pokagon Band of Potawatomi is at NCAI for a second time.
This time I've got more involved with like the Youth Commission, just learning about what they do and some of the things that they're involved with. So that's been a good thing for me. And you know, I've been even thinking about running for Youth Commission after this, so it's just really great to see youth at the national level just kind of really getting involved and wanting to, you know, help out.
Michael Gamash is also from the Michigan tribe and is learning leadership skills.
A few of the things that I've learned this year, also along with like going, bringing everybody together with unity, is that everybody has their own individual place in like what they do in their tribe. Everybody can be an individual and like work on their own things.
Young people from tribal communities across the country were at the mid-year gathering. The Canadian government is days away from making a decision on the Northern Gateway Pipeline proposal to carry Alberta oil to the West Coast. At a summit this week, the natural resource minister says there's been progress, but as Dan Karpinchuk reports, at least one Native leader in British Columbia disagrees.
Natural Resources Minister Greg Rickford says he's confident that the foundation for an effective dialogue has been laid. He says global demand for energy is expected to increase by one-third by 2035, and investments are expected to bring $180 billion in economic benefits. And across the country, hundreds of resource projects worth $650 billion are being planned or are underway. But Rickford adds that none of that can happen unless there is a strong and confident relationship between First Nations and governments. The leaders of British Columbia's most powerful Aboriginal organizations are still saying no to the Northern Gateway proposal. Stuart Phillip is the Grand Chief of the Union of BC Chiefs.
Government and industry could have said, we know everybody in this room is concerned about the catastrophic effects of an oil spill or a tanker spill, so let's start there. A government could have said, we know the relationship between government and First Nations is abysmal, let's start there. But that didn't happen.
Phillip says that relationship is getting worse, not better, and when it comes to controversial resource projects, the two sides are moving further apart. He says all parties involved keep holding meetings to talk about the same thing with no real change in the results. If the pipeline is approved, Phillip and other Native leaders say they are prepared to launch lawsuits and do whatever it takes to block the project. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In June, King Kamehameha is honored in Hawaii. Celebrations take place to remember the chief who united the Hawaiian Islands in 1795. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Humboldt State University has a part-time, 3.5-year online Master of Social Work program emphasizing decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted from August 1 to begin in January. More at humboldt.edu/socialwork. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, June 12th, and my name is Shona Strausser. And in the studio with me, I have Bob Deering, the Biomass Coordinator for the U.S. Forest Service. I have Michael Ahern, the Senior Vice President of Project Development for Evergreen Energy of St. Paul, Minnesota. And Jesse Baker, the Assistant City Manager from Montpelier, Vermont. And they're here in town today, actually, and have been all day and will be this evening, to talk about district energy systems. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you.
Hi, Shona.
Hi. So, Bob, I will start with you. And I'm wondering, so this is something that you're very passionate about personally. And I'm wondering also, what is a district energy system, and how did this kind of conversation come up into play?
Well, a district energy system in the context of Juno is a system that would distribute heat from a central heating plant to the buildings around Juno. And it's nothing new in Alaska. There's district energy systems already running in Alaska. Fairbanks has one that heating plant, the power plant in downtown Fairbanks, distributes all of its excess heat to the buildings in downtown Fairbanks. The university in Fairbanks is distributing its heat. I became familiar with district energy with the Coast Guard base. I'm an engineer that also works for the Coast Guard. And the base in Kodiak has a district heating plant, a steam plant that distributes heat to pretty much all of the buildings on the Coast Guard base on Kodiak. And as I was working for the Coast Guard, sitting in the federal building here in Juneau, looking out the window at downtown Juneau, I kept thinking, why isn't downtown Juneau connected? All these big heating loads sitting right next to each other. Everybody has their own individual boiler, with their own individual heating tanks. We could be using renewable energy in these buildings and operating much more efficiently and much less expensively. This week was the International District Energy Association's international conference happening in Seattle, which I attended, and just by chance, we're lucky enough to have Jesse Baker presenting on the plant that Montpelier, Vermont just put in their capital city. And Michael Ahern is with St. Paul District Energy, Minnesota's capital city, which also has a district energy plant. And they were both at this conference, and we were able to lure them up to come visit us here in Juneau and talk about their projects. So we're very pleased and thankful that those guys could spend some time with us.
So, Michael, we'll start with you. You're actually here. Both of you are going to speak this evening at the city. What is it?
At 5:30 in Assembly Chambers.
In the Assembly Chambers. And can you talk a little bit about what St. Paul, because you actually have an entire consulting firm and that has to do with this kind of energy source. So.
Yeah, so in St. Paul, 30 years ago, we started a district energy system that was formed as a collaboration between the mayor and the local business owners to develop an energy program that could be much more advanced than what they had at that time. And so for the last 30 years, that system has been growing. It's integrated new technologies, more renewable fuels, and expanded its bandwidth from a fuel perspective so that customers today actually pay less in St. Paul for their energy than they did 30 years ago when you adjust for inflation. And also with that, over those 30 years, we've moved from primarily coal-based generation in 1980 to primarily biomass-based generation today. So not only have we reduced greenhouse gas emissions, improved the efficiency of the system with combined heat and power, but we've also been able to provide our customers with very low, very stable energy rates as compared to if they were doing on-site generation. And the wonderful thing about district energy systems is that they can be fuel agnostic and they can utilize whatever fuels are available to the community that they would serve. So there isn't any standard template for a district system. It's really what are the needs of the customers and what are the fuels and the energy sources that are available in that local community to serve those customers.
Well, it seems like something that is almost a no-brainer. So speaking of, Jesse, you actually had this has really recently happened in Montpelier, and I was wondering if you could talk about the experience because you actually work for the city. So, you know, it's kind of a different perspective than Michael here. And I was wondering how it's been working for your environment.
Sure. So Montpelier is the capital city of Vermont. The state for the state office complex has had a biomass central heat plant to heat their campus for decades. The city, in the interest of finding a more sustainable energy source and economic development and risk mitigation during flooding that we experienced in Montpelier, was looking to create a distribution system to heat our kind of vibrant downtown with a more efficient and locally sourced heating source. So we partnered with the state, we modernized their state heat plant, and we built a distribution system that runs through our downtown. So starting this winter, we heated six of our public buildings and private customers, and starting October 1, we'll heat a total of 40 buildings in downtown Montpelier, all the state office buildings, all the municipal office buildings, and several private partners as well. And we are heating with biomass, which in Vermont is our most locally sourced renewable energy source and getting us off of fossil fuels, which is the only other energy source in Montpelier. Natural gas is not available.
And what is the response of the community been?
The response of the community has been overwhelming. We've sold out of the capacity that we have available from the state heat plant at this point, what the city has purchased. There is extra capacity that can be purchased in future years, but we started with this implementation plan and to date have sold out. It's been a really great partnership between our private business community, our municipal government, and our state government. And actually the federal government, too, has their federal office building on our state system.
Michael, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the trends in the United States and where this is going and that kind of thing.
Well, particularly in the East Coast, where there has been a lot of attention in the last few years because of Hurricane Sandy, more and more cities are looking to develop a microgrid or a resilient city, and they define that as being able to generate electricity, generate thermal energy, all with energy sources or fuel sources that are locally derived, all within their specific community. And so district energy systems are seen as a key component of developing those resilient cities, those microgrids. And that has been a significant development over the last few years, and it's resonated throughout the country. And so we, in St. Paul, we have probably 100 various communities visit us on an annual basis looking to replicate what we have in St. Paul. And at some level, just the basic framework, seeing what framework we have and seeing how they could apply it to their communities. And that has really accelerated lately over the last few years because of this drive toward resilient cities.
And Bob, how do you see Juno kind of meshing with this idea? And what are the great benefits that you could say, okay, community members, here's what you're going to get?
I'll start with the second question first. And I think one of the really interesting benefits that Juno could take advantage of is we have some waste to energy opportunities here in Juno that I've been looking at lately that are very intriguing. For instance, wastewater plant biosolids. You know, probably a lot of people in Juno remember that we had an incinerator that in 2011. Bit the dust and reached the end of its service life, and then they were putting the biosolids on our landfill. That gave it an interesting new bouquet that some folks didn't appreciate. And now those biosolids are being shipped south it's approaching $1 million a year, I think, to dispose of our biosolids. Well, that's possibly an energy source that we could be taking advantage of. And I know that CBJ has a contract right now that's evaluating what to do with those biosolids. Maybe we could be taking those biosolids, which is an energy source, and feeding that energy into a district energy system and heating part of our community with that.
That would actually be really incredible and such a huge cost savings for everybody.
Yeah, it's a win-win all the way around. It's not just about Juneau, though. You know, we're talking about Juneau here, but our focus is on communities throughout Southeast Alaska and throughout Alaska. Other communities are very interested in district heating, communities like Hoonah and Yakutat, Wrangell, Ketchikan, even small communities can see very significant benefits from tapping into a district energy system like this. It's not just big cities like St. Paul, Minnesota.
And the district energy system really is the platform for looking into the opportunities, like Bob had just mentioned, whether it is biosolids or biogas or thermal storage from excess electricity production from hydro. There's so many sources that could be integrated into a district energy system, but you need that district energy system first, because individual site generation at each individual building could never take advantage of those types of energy sources otherwise.
Right. So tonight, there's actually a great opportunity for members of the Juneau community to really get involved. And actually, and maybe if they're not getting involved, they're still learning about what this is, because I'm sure there are tons and tons of questions. What time can people go, and where do they go, and what will the format be?
It's 5:30 in Assembly Chambers, and Michael and Jesse will be putting on a presentation. They've got a bunch of slides. They've got a really, really interesting presentation between the two of them, showing kind of on a large scale what district energy is, what the technology is, what the economics are, and then Jesse will be showing us exactly how that went down in Montpelier, Vermont, how that project worked, what were the challenges, what were the successes, and then there will be some opportunity for questions and discussion as well. It's highly recommended.
Great, and that's 5:30 p.m. today at the Assembly Chambers. Well, thank you so much for joining us to talk on Juneau Afternoon about this very important and actually future beneficial discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're tuned in to Juneau Afternoon. It's Thursday, June 12th. My name is Shona Strausser, and we have some more guests for you. Before we get to our next guest, we'll go ahead and listen to Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac for Thursday, June 12th.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 12th of June, 2014. It's the birthday of the writer Juna Barnes, born near Cornwall on Hudson, New York, 1892, lived in the bohemian world of Greenwich Village for years, then as an expatriate in Paris, drinking, smoking, having love affairs with men and women. She was a journalist there. She interviewed Florence Ziegfeld and Coco Chanel. She was friends with James Joyce and Gertrude Stein, had a long affair with the sculptor Thelma Wood. Juna Barnes wrote a famous novel, Nightwood, published 1936, modernist novel about the destructive relationship of lovers named Robin and Nora. Robin was based on Thelma. Dylan Thomas called it one of the great prose books of all time. William S. Burroughs loved it. So did T.S. Eliot. The novel didn't make much money, though, and Juna Barnes had to live off the charity of Peggy Guggenheim, a patron of the arts. She turned to alcohol, she went through a bottle of whiskey a day, moved back to New York City, back into an apartment in Greenwich Village, where she lived as a recluse for the last 42 years of her life. E.E. Cummings was her neighbor. He used to check on her by yelling out his window. She spent her last 30 years working on a long poem that was found in her apartment when she died in 1982. It's the birthday of the novelist Charles Kingsley, born in Holne, England, 1819, best remembered for his children's book, The Water Babies, an allegorical story written to teach Christian values, also a strange and enjoyable fairy tale. The story of a 10-year-old chimney sweep named Tom, who falls through a chimney into the room of a wealthy young girl, and when he's discovered there, he's chased out of town until he gives in to thirst and weakness and falls into a river and drowns, where fairies turn him into a creature called a water baby, which is a little less than 4 inches long and has gills. And he's guided by Mrs. Be Done By As You Did, and he makes a journey to the other end of nowhere, where he has to rescue the cruel Mr. Grimes, his former master. And it's the birthday of the sociologist and writer Harriet Martineau, born in Norwich, England, 1802. She wrote for Unitarian publications. She learned Wordsworth by heart. And then she set out to write The Illustrations of Political Economy, fictional stories illustrating principles of political theory, a big bestseller in the 1830s, more popular than novels by Charles Dickens. Here's a poem for today by W.S. Merwin, Homecoming. Once, only when the summer was nearly over and my own hair had been white as the day's clouds for more years than I was counting, I looked across the garden at evening. Paula was still weeding around flowers that open after dark, and I looked up to the clear sky and saw the new moon, and at that moment from behind me a band of dark birds and then another after it, flying in silence, long curving wings hardly moving, the plovers just in from the sea, and the flight clear from Alaska, half their weight gone to get them home, but home now, arriving without a sound as it rose to meet them. W.S. Merwin's poem Homecoming from The Moon Before Morning, published by Copper Canyon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, June 12th. My name is Shona Strausser. And in the studio with me, I'm so lucky. I love my Thursday afternoon shift here. M.K. McNaughton, artist and educator extraordinaire. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Shona.
Sure. So you have a new exhibit opening really soon.
I do.
And it's on friendship.
That's what I'm calling it, on friendship. I had planned to do a show with a cousin of mine who's very cool. Great and really busy. And she kind of backed out. So what do you do when your family dumps you? You turn to your friends.
That is so true. Yeah. So it's interesting because some of these paintings, because they are all paintings, right?
They are. They're paintings. And I asked friends for prompts, something that represented our friendship, an image.
So it's the friendship between you and, say, your friends, essentially. What kind of responses did you get? Did you get any weird ones?
I did. I And what I love, too, is that people said the first thing that came off the top of their head, and then they usually kind of backtrack, like, I don't know what that means. But they were good about just spitting out a prompt, which I like. Salt was one of the surprising ones. And I asked, well, what does that mean? And that friend told me, well, you know, salt isn't very good on its own. And I thought, what does that mean? But it makes other things taste better together. They're better.
True.
It hurts on a wound.
It does indeed.
Uh-huh. It's healing.
It is.
So that was pretty sweet once I digested all of that information. So one little prompt turned into a kind of nice story connection. And there were quite a few nature images, fields. There were some things that were intertwined, vines, things, unjudgmental kind of openness, things that started to represent what's important in a friendship, I think. And the idea for this show, too, is that it first Friday in July happens to be on the 4th of July, which isn't a great night for an art opening. We're going to have the show on July 3rd, and I hope a lot of locals come, but I hope also some tourists come. And I thought, well, maybe this will be, although it's personal to me, these images are connected to my friends. They're kind of universal themes. So maybe they're little pieces that people can take home. And for me, it's just been very affirming and sweet. It's a sweet project. So I'd like to kind of spread that nice energy.
Is it at COPA?
No, this show will be at the Jack.
Oh, it's at the Jack.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And they're in their gallery space. And you said you had about 35 paintings?
I counted 35 new paintings today. Yeah.
And that's incredible.
25 are little. I wanted to do a bunch of little ones. And then when you line 25 paintings up, little ones, they don't take up very much space. And I thought, well, I need some big ones. And my niece gave me the image bird. She said, I don't know why, but she's from Portland. That's what they say. We put birds on things if we're from Portland.
Oh, is that true?
So like it's
a very Portland thing to do, yeah.
Yeah, so that seemed fitting. So I started painting birds having little conversations with each other, and they kind of looked like they were mad at each other at first. And I thought, what's that about? But as I painted them, they turned into kind of bolstering each other. There's one large painting of three birds, and the two on either side are talking to the one in the middle. But I realized they were kind of building up its feathers and bolstering it. And the bird started to smile through the process of the painting. They went from being mad to kind of happy. And so that's the gift of this show. I also have some rusty tools lying around that I wanted to...
Who said your friendship is like a rusty tool?
That was probably me. I'm attracted to rusty tools. So I had a great conversation with
Rachel.
Rachel, thank you. My mind was
blank. Speaking of somebody who loves rusty tools,
yes,
Rachel Usler, she works almost extensively or exclusively in rusty tools.
Yeah, so thanks to her, I borrowed a couple of shovels, and they struck me that they looked like they were just kind of hanging out together, lining up against the wall like a couple of teenage boys. So there's one painting in progress called Just Hanging Out.
Oh, nice.
As a mother of a teen, the rusty tools are coming to life for me. And then I borrowed from her a broken tricycle, rusted away, so the two pieces are kind of separated. And I took my cousin's prompt. After she dumped me, I asked my cousin to give me an image to represent our friendship in that we share genetic material, we're connected, but we're unique, so the two kind of rusty separated bicycle pieces are my cousin and I.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm enjoying this.
So she'll be there anyway, regardless.
She is. Yeah, I texted her a picture of it.
Oh, great. And what was the most interesting one for you to paint, or the most challenging, I guess?
In some ways, the most special, if that's answering the question, is my 17-year-old. I asked him to give me an image, and he said that represented our friendship. And he said, well, I'm not your friend. You're my mom. I said, I know, but there's some friendly parts to our relationship. So something that represents that, not the evil mother ruling part. And he gave me the image. He stuck his arms out and said, it's like a like a balance beam, like a teeter-totter. Like sometimes you were unbalanced when you're too restrictive, and other times I'm a little out of control, and you pull me back in balance. And so that was a great gift to me. I really appreciate him saying that. And so there's a painting of a teeter-totter.
Oh, that's great.
Uh-huh.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, it is.
So you have a lot of things going on, I would say, most of the time. And so this opening is July 3rd. It's at the Jack. And there's a lot going on at the Jack there, actually, even that week with the opening of Summerfest, Perseverance Theater Summerfest shows. So you could actually double-head it that night, I think.
Triple-head it, because the fireworks happen. So you could
Come
downtown, have some hors d'oeuvres and look at art, go to a play, then go out for drinks and see the fireworks.
Booms. Yeah. How great. So what else is going on for you? What else are you working on, upcoming gallery exhibits? Or
I have a couple painting projects and quite a series of portrait projects that I'm working on right now. I had a great time doing the Secrets project, which was large portraits, charcoal drawings. And the interviews went even better than I had hoped they would, people talking about the impact of what we share and what we don't share. So I was driving to my studio, and I passed some guys working in the horrible weather in January on the school district building near my house, and thought, oh, I should include one of them in my show, but I realized that wasn't really about Secrets. That was a whole different show. So that's Grit. And I'm going to do 52 portraits, a portrait a week in 2015, and hang them in the Jack lobby. I'll make a frame that I can just change out. So weekly, every Monday, I'll put up a new picture. And then I'll have a little digital screen that's rotating through, showing the images that have already been shown. So by the end of the year, all 52 will rotate through. And I think someone suggested I make a blog of it, too. So it's a tribute to working people, and we all work. But some people have that little extra something, whether it's in their work or in their life. My friend Jenna Schufelt is biking across the country right now without sleeping for 12 days in a race. She's got grit.
Yeah, right.
Guys working in the dumping rain, people fishing. You know, people, there's so many people around us who work hard. So we're looking for diverse professions and or people with crazy intense hobbies. It doesn't necessarily have to be a paid profession. It can be another kind of work, your passion. So I welcome suggestions of folks. I want to get a range of ages and different kinds of work. And so I'm collecting those images and interviews now, and then I'll start working on them. So I have a bunch done. So I'm not really forcing myself to do a portrait a week next year. But I'm also going to do a show at COPA in September, little portraits of people who are regulars there and little paintings of their inspired by their favorite flavors. So I was just there interviewing somebody who told me her favorite flavor was caramel pear miso.
That is really good. Have you had it?
No.
Oh,
I haven't heard of that one.
It's the bomb.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great idea. So they're going to be, that's a lot of fun.
It is. That's kind of just a fun, lighthearted one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And so your studio, can people get a hold of you through your studio, or what's the best way? So if they're like, oh, I have the perfect portrait, gritty person, how can they get a hold of you?
You can find me on Facebook, or I have a website, and then you can get my number from there. But you have to remember how to spell my name. M.K. MacNaughton. It's M.A.C. MKMacNaughton.com or Facebook M.K. MacNaughton. So, or you can call Shona.
That's right. Call me. I'll track her down.
Screen.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Are you doing classes again this summer? Are you taking a summer class break, or will they resume in the fall? Because I know lots of people love the classes.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I really love teaching out of my studio. People who come really want to learn. And it's like a spectator sport for me, really. It's entertaining. So I am going to teach some kids' classes and one adult class, 2 months' worth, in the fall. And they're up on my website now, mkmacnaughton.com. I have a kids' drawing, painting, invention, two different four-week series, and then an eight-week adult class. I have a group of folks who've taken several of my classes, so I'm taking their suggestions, we're going to really explore color in oil painting and composition. And we'll do a different exercise every week. But we'll also do one long painting over the 8-week course. So so there's space in all those classes. And then I have a show coming up in Anchorage I'm excited about. And in the fall also. So I'll be hanging some The Secret Life of Chairs.
The Secret Life of Chairs remount.
Yeah, and you know, the Rust might end up joining in that. Secret Life of Chairs and Other Stories, I called it. See who else appears.
Other stories.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, MK, it's always a pleasure. And so on Friendship, could you just talk about just the details one more time so people can go?
Because
it is kind of a funky day.
It is a funky day. So I hope people will come. It's Thursday, first Thursday of July, which is the 3rd, 4:30 to 7. And we'll be in the Jack in the gallery.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to always talk to you about your art and definitely see it.
Thank you.
You're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, June 12th. My name is Shona Strasser. And in the studio with me, I have Katie Spielberger and Katie Moritz. Thank you for joining me.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So you're here to talk about Juno Pride Week because it is, well, it's really soon.
Yes, it starts Monday, and mm-hmm. we have activities every single day from Monday through Sunday of next week.
Yes.
I love it. I'm so happy about that.
We are too.
Yeah. So can you take us through, well, how about first take us through the week, kind of what's going on for Pride Week and where and what's going to be super cool?
Okay. Well, you start because it's your kickball game.
Oh, okay. So the very first thing we're doing is on Monday we're having a kickoff kickball game at Cote Park at 6 o'clock. And you can sign up in advance or you can just show up. And also on Monday is the start of the film festival, which is going on all week. Monday they'll be showing Small Town Gay Bar at the Gold Town Nickelodeon at 7:30. And there are films every day of the week. Yes. Yeah. So, except Friday.
That's great because, you know, the Gold Town lately has been really partnering with local organizations to really make sure that people can, you know, just see, get more out there, see more and experience more. So I think that's really awesome all week long. Is there you could probably check out that schedule at the Gold Town Nickelodeon website, I do believe.
Yes, and all of the Pride Week activities are also online on the CEGLA website at CEGLA.org, S-E-A-G-L-A.org.
For people who don't know what CEGLA is, could you tell us what that stands for?
Yes, it's the Southeast Alaska Gay and Lesbian Alliance, and it's local organization for LGBTQ people. And we're both on the board, and so are a lot of other really great people, and we've been really trying to get the organization going again and get lots of different activities for different groups, different subgroups of the LGBTQ community. So we're really, really excited to have Pride Week, because I think this is going to be the biggest Pride celebration that Juneau has ever had.
You know, I've lived here for a really long time, and this is definitely the biggest Pride Week we've had, and I'm really excited about it. I think it's just very cool. So what else is going on? So you start off with a kickball game, and then it seems like Tuesday we take a little break. Well, you go see the movie, but I'm a cheerleader because that's a great film.
Yes. Go see that movie.
Yeah. That's why there's nothing else going
on. Everyone will like that movie.
Oh, yeah, it's so great. And Wednesday, this makes me happy. Go ahead.
Gay Ryoki.
It's kind of like karaoke.
Yeah, but full of pride.
Full of pride. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so come to the rendezvous and do some karaoke. It's going to be really fun.
There are prizes for the best singer.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yes, it's true.
I don't know how this will be determined, but you can win something.
Yes.
Nice. And what happens next?
So then we have the hike and a bonfire. Should I just run through the whole week?
Or? Perfect.
Okay.
Let's do it.
And then, so that's Thursday, the hike and the bonfire at Skater's Cabin at 6 p.m. And then on Friday, we have a poetry slam with Woosh K, and that's at the Silver Bow. And then a big event that Katie and I have both been working on a lot on for Friday is Pride Prom, and it's going to be a really fun dance party. DJ Manu is going to be spinning, and a lot of really great performances, drag performances by Gigi Monroe. If you went to the 4A's performance, you know who that is. She's really great. And then Saturday, we'll have the Pride Picnic, which is the big annual event that they do every year, and we've kind of just built on that, and that's at Sandy Beach at noon. So,
and then we'll finish up Saturday night with, for people who are interested, a bar crawl and big gay dance party, beginning at the Triangle and ending at the Rendezvous. And then wrapping up Sunday, there'll be a brunch at Rockwell at noon. And then the PFLAG Juneau Pride Chorus will be singing music on the fly at the airport at 6:45, so kind of singing Pride Week to a close.
That's incredible. You all have really bitten off a whole lot here. This is great. So it's interesting, you know, because I lived in Seattle for a really long time, and, you know, and a lot of places have kind of the traditional parade. And I was wondering, is that something that you looked into here in Juneau, or that you decided maybe we'll just do a bunch of other things because we'll just keep partying all week? Or how did that work?
Well, what's really convenient is the 4th of July is coming right up, and as we all know, the Juneau 4th of July parade is the best parade anywhere. So we're going to be marching in the parade. We'll have sort of a prideful contingent of the of the parade, but one of many, many groups marching in the parade.
We're going to join forces here. We'll do the huge parade, and then you have a whole week of activities.
Yeah, we
really have been joining forces with a lot of people to put on this
mm-hmm.
week.
A lot of people have been doing
this. CIGLA, PFLAG, but also just the individual volunteers. Mm-hmm. The film festival is really just Avon Handley Merck, who's like, I want to put on a film festival, and sort of got that going with the Gold Town. So it's really been a collaborative effort with a lot of organizations and individuals, which is cool.
It's amazing. I would be remiss, and we already mentioned a little part of him, but James Hoagland is a pretty new guy to town, and he has, I think, really, you know, put a lot of new energy into making sure that there is a Pride Week, and that. So I was wondering if you could chat a little bit about his efforts.
Yeah, so he was the chair of the Pride Committee that kind of is part of CIGLA, and I worked a little bit on that committee too. But he really was like, had a lot of energy and a lot of ideas, and so did a lot of people in the committee. And he is also an amazing drag performer. So, I mean, he brings a lot to everything. He's fun and great and nice and just like a really open, welcoming guy. I love him. He's great.
Yeah, he's been such a great new addition to our community, and I think a lot of this week and all of these events and sort of the revitalization of some of the organizations has come through just new energy, like James and others, just coming in and saying, hey, we want to do more. We want to have a big Pride Week. We've been having a picnic every year. Let's make this huge. I went out of town for 2 weeks and came back and saw the schedule of what we're doing and was just blown away by how much kind of came together in a very short period of time.
Yeah, that's great. So if people want to volunteer or get involved or they want to just show up, what's the best way people can reach somebody at CIGLA?
Webmaster?
Oh, yeah. A really easy email address is just webmaster@CIGLA.org. And you can also visit our website. You can also look for CIGLA on Facebook. That's actually a really easy way to get in touch with us. You can send us a message there, follow us, but just searching for CIGLA. And we're putting out lots of information about all of the Pride Week activities there. And also on Facebook and social media, there will be an ongoing Pride photo scavenger hunt where you get daily clues. So, that's another thing that we're using social media for.
And or if you know anyone on the, you know, involved in Pride, you can just contact one of us and we will set you up with whatever you want to know.
That's great. So it's CIGLA, S-E-A-G-L-A, for those folks who are going, CIGLA? What are you? I don't know. And a lot of this stuff is real. It's free, which I love. And but there are a couple of benefits in here. So there's actually, or I guess I see one, maybe two. But what are those funds used for? And
so the Pride Prom, I guess that's the first one that comes to mind. That's going to be $15 at the door, and that's just going toward the PFLAG organization, so just continuing the chorus and everything they do. I know that we're going to be taking donations all week long because we want to have more funds for CIGLA to do more things in the future. I know we've kind of been like riding it out on the same level of funding, and we kind of want to take it to the next level. So anyone who's interested in donating can donate at any time. And we're also going to have Pride t-shirts for $20 each, and a big chunk of that will go toward the organization as well. And they're really awesome shirts. I wish I could show you guys, but radio. So,
I really would like to encourage a lot of young people to get involved for sure, because, you know, I think that it's just becoming a more diverse community here, and wanted to say that I'm sure there's room for them to get involved, yes?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we want everyone to, people can come to CIGLA meetings and volunteer any age. And also our weekly Rockwell events. We have a like kind of a social mixer from 6 to 8 every Friday at Rockwell. And that's open to people of all ages. There's no age limit there. So, yeah, any age.
Great. Well, Katie, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this, because it's really just wonderful. I'm so excited that it's happening in our community and on such a big scale, too. So congratulations. And in honor of Pride Week celebration and the World Cup, here is Celebration from Kool and the Gang. And you can celebrate good times here this week with Celebration happening. The Celebration 2014 parade will be this Saturday, and that's at 8 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. It'll go from the tramway terminal to Centennial Hall. And I have to say, every 2 years, it might be, I mean, I think it is, my favorite thing to do in Juneau. And it's just a really beautiful, spiritual, wonderful thing. So go check that out. And speaking of wonderful and spiritual and beautiful, Catherine Hatch.
Hey.
Hey.
Good what segue.
Yeah. Art's up here. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff, especially at the Jack, which is part of the whole celebration scene. So I've got bunches of booths there that you can go and visit and learn more about things. And I think there's multiple parades going on. So there's the big one on Saturday, but I just feel like there's a constant drumming right now. That's not just in my head, right?
That's not in your head. That's
good.
Legit.
Yeah, because we can definitely hear that downtown all over the place. We've got the whole lineup for you celebration-wise. And you can pick up little pocket guides like the one I have here at the Jack and probably at various places all over town. And it's great because it gives you the whole lineup of what's going on. Of course, we already went through the juried art show. Giving out the prizes, but you can see the art in our gallery, part of the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute show all month. Tonight they've got something, but they just had the soap berry contest at the Jack. You could hear them smashing them into the frothy dessert from my office. And this evening there'll be the seaweed contest judging at 7 p.m. They've got all sorts of movies and dances and lectures and book signings. Tonight they're going to be showing Winter in the Blood at the Gold Town. Native Artist Market is up and running. That'll be 9 to 5 today and tomorrow. So go and snag some beautiful things. They make such great fur items. We only have a few at the Jack, so there's a huge selection out there. And all the carvings, just gorgeous. Story time, language sessions, just it's nonstop.
It is. There's so much going on. And you can check it out also, if you don't pick up one of those brochures, you can check it out at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. The schedule is online there as well.
That's right. Yeah, so good stuff going on there. And then you just had Katie and Katie on to talk about all Pride Week's many activities that are happening next week. It seems like the biggest one that's the thematic is going to be, besides the scavenger hunt, they've got a new film showing at the Gold Town every night, starting Monday with small town gay bar, I believe, and then But I'm a Cheerleader. They've got Paris is Burning. They're even going to have something they're calling Gay Karaoke. But gay.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Exactly.
And they said there's prizes, so I'm going to go.
I bet there's going to be like different costumes. It's going to be a lot of fun. I wonder if there's prizes at the kickball. Did they mention that? That's how they're kicking it off, kickball, Cope Park Monday night. But if you came in a wig, that's probably fine.
Yeah.
Other things, this weekend, we are saying goodbye once and for all, probably, to conductor Kyle Pickett at the symphony.
That's right. He's on. He's moving on.
It's the last concert of the season, the summer concert for the symphony, and it's kind of touching. They're doing an exact reprise of the concert that Kyle first played with them back in 2000.
Well, that's sweet. That's fitting.
Just full circle for that guy. They did the farewell dinner last week, and he told such great stories about his time in Juneau. So it's more of like a see you later than goodbye forever, it seems like. Because once you've been here this long, it really takes a piece of your part. So they'll be back.
And
we've got
when
new conductors coming
when,
in.
Yeah, when are those concerts?
They are going to be Saturday at 8 p.m. at JDHS and also Sunday at 3 p.m. You can get your tickets, the usual outlets, online at jack.org or at the Jack at Hearthside. There's also going to be a concert conversation. I think that's what they call those, an hour beforehand. So if you get to JDHS at 7 p.m., you can listen to the talk about the music, talk about where Kyle's going, what direction the symphony is going in, and then the music strikes up at 8.
Sounds like a great time. Yeah, he's been such a vital part of our community. It'd be great to go check out his final performance.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what they do next year because I don't think they've hired one person. They're bringing in like a different conductor for each concert as kind of a trial basis. So you can kind of get involved, go to each concert next season, and see who you liked best, I guess.
Wow, like put a name in the hat type thing.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Tomorrow is also Friday, so we are still doing the scheduled Food Truck Friday like we're doing every week at the Jack, 4 to 7 p.m. There won't be a performer as usual. We'll just have the celebration events going on, but there will be the usual food trucks, food vendors, arts and craft vendors out on the lawn 4 to 7. Although I think it's going to rain, so we might skip Mosquito Market this week. So don't worry about that. But come on down and just continue it as an extension of all of the markets around town. We've also got our Music on the Fly series this Sunday. It's going to be featuring musical moments, another free concert for you Sunday night, 6:45 at the airport baggage claim. Whole host of kids activities next week. You can sign up to be part of a variety of camps. They've got Beach Week at the Discovery Southeast. They've got STEM camps at Sea Perch and Underwater Robotics. There's Basic Ceramics, Leather Workshop at the Canvas. Also, they've got Summer Olympics with little ones at Zach Gordon Youth Center. So a whole lot going on. A wheel throwing as well at the Canvas. So those are all just 1 week long. So just one fun activity either in the morning or the afternoon. For your kid, Monday through Friday, and pick a different one the next week. They've also going to be a talk about life in the Gaza Strip with exchange student out of Haines at 7 p.m. at the Northern Lights United Church. And at Tuesday at the Northern Lights United Church, you can get tickets to see Alexander Tudinov in piano concert. $18 to $25 for that, usual ticket outlets. That one's kind of being brought in independently. If piano isn't your thing, go and see Independence Day as part of the retro sci-fi movie series starting up in the summer at Marie Drake Planetarium. Those, of course, are free. What else is going on this week? So we've got the full schedule for Celebration that we could talk about a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, people can definitely check it out online. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that series about the planetarium, they've got some really cool things going on. And I heard, you know, that kind of retro movies, but that should be pretty great. Independence Day on the big dummy.
Although I don't consider that retro. Like, I'm old enough to remember when that came out, and that was like in the 2000s, right? So
You're getting old.
I guess so. They do, you know, I think last year they did a lot of Star Wars and things like that. So and the actual old ones, not the new ones.
That's great.
So and those are all free, and they just do a different one every couple of weeks. So
yeah. So this calendar can be found at jahc.org. It can also be found at ktoo.org, and you can find out everything that's going on here in town.
Yep, we got more than what I've been talking about. The whole full list is online on our new website, same address, jahc.org.
Thank you so much, Catherine, for coming in. We'll see you next Thursday.
All right, bye.
This is Bird Note. In summer, the forests of the eastern United States are home to a bounty of birds. Birds intriguing, attractive, mellifluous, or mysterious. But there's one bird in particular that nearly every time its name comes up, you hear the word gorgeous. The scarlet tanager. The male scarlet tanager is a deep, dazzling red, glowing with the luster of velvet. His entire 7-inch body is feathered in scarlet, in bold contrast to his black wings and tail. This resplendent summer visitor spends most of the year in tropical South America, as far south as Ecuador and Bolivia. Scarlet tanagers nest within large tracts of mature forest, where they forage for insects under the shelter of the tree canopy. It seems that such boldly colored birds might offer an easy target for predators, or for a bird watcher's watchful gaze. But, though brilliant scarlet when viewed in the open, male scarlet tanagers are remarkably hard to spot when perched among the branches overhead. The contrasting bright and dark colors mimic summer's pattern of light and shadow within the canopy. Thus the bird is often concealed. So that gorgeous visitor from the tropics may well be hidden in plain sight. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon on this Thursday, June 12th. Stay tuned tomorrow for Juno Afternoon. Pat Moore hosts also at 3 p.m. We'll get the details about the upcoming STEM summer camps. Sharon Barton will fill us in on the food bank. Author Yvette Arujo will be here to highlight her new book, Origin. We'll talk with emotion code practitioner and yoga therapist Kathy Houston. All that and more on Juno Afternoon tomorrow at 3 p.m.
Have a stake in making sure that these jihadists are not getting a permanent foothold.
With Islamic militants gaining ground in Iraq, the White House struggles over what to do.
For Thursday, June 12th, this is All Things Considered.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. Coming up.